Move, der New Mobility Podcast von Auto, Motor und Sport.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Move, dem New Mobility Podcast von Auto, Motor und Sport. Ich darf heute an meiner Seite die Birgit Prima begrüßen, unsere Chefredakteurin von AMS und Move. Und mit ihr sind wir heute nach Potsdam gereist und nicht irgendwohin, sondern eine wunderbare, schöne Location in einem kleinen Wäldchen mit einem wunderschönen alten Haus. Wir sind nämlich am Potsdam Institut für Klimafolgenforschung. Und das sind wir, weil wir mit Johann Rockström sprechen wollen, dem Direktor des Instituts und ich würde sagen, einem der wichtigsten Köpfe in Sachen Klimaforschung, die wir gerade bei uns hier so haben. Und den haben wir nicht nur heute im Podcast, sondern den haben wir auch noch beim Auto, Motor und Sportkongress am 25. September als Speaker dort. Deswegen, wenn euch das hier nicht reicht, ihr könnt auf jeden Fall auch zum Kongress kommen und euch das dort anschauen, was er zu sagen hat. Und mit ihm wollen wir heute aber über das Modell der planetaren Grenzen sprechen, das er nämlich mit erfunden hat. Und das ist das, wovon eigentlich alle Klimamaßnahmen der Politik und von allen anderen, die wir so kennen, abgeleitet werden gerade. Deswegen verspricht es sehr spannend zu werden, denn wir wollen mit ihm sprechen, was Personen wie wir alle hier tun können, um dem Thema Klimawandel zu begegnen, in welchem Kontext es denn wirtschaftlich und sozial alles steht und welchen Chancen er überhaupt sieht, dass wir das Ruder noch rumreißen können und vor allem, wie wir das tun wollen. Und deswegen sage ich hallo und herzlich willkommen. Schön, dass du heute da bist und wir sprechen können. Und da wir mit ihm sprechen wollen, müssen wir das Ganze jetzt auf Englisch machen. Deswegen switchen wir aufs Englische. Thank you, Mr. Rockström, to have us here. First of all, do you compensate your carbon footprint in any ways or how do you work with this kind of things?
To be honest, I don't systematically compensate or offset. We try here at the Institute to increasingly account for our carbon footprint, mm-hmm. but we focus much more of our attention to reduce our emissions as much as we can. And then personally, I do a lot of efforts of transitioning as much as possible to public transport and almost a fanatic bicycle rider at any chance there is to commute instead of using unnecessarily fossil fuel driven transport. So, and the reason for this is as you know, the difficulty in finding really robust offsetting mechanisms so mm-hmm. far.
Which is your most used transport device? It's your bike or?
Today, definitely. It's my bike.
And can you walk to the institute here, or do you go by bike? Or
no, I have quite a long commute, but it's a 10-kilometer cycling ride, which I do all the time. But actually, even if we have meetings in Berlin here from Potsdam, it's remarkably accessible also by bicycle, and you don't lose so much time actually. And one of the beauties in Berlin is that you're allowed to take bicycles in your public transport. Mm-hmm. So that's I think a very efficient way of kind of having at both ends of a train ride simply your bicycle. So mm-hmm. yes, it's increasingly efficient, and as you've seen, the exponential rise in electric bicycling. I'm a bit allergic to that myself, but wow, isn't it fantastic to yeah. see how that increases the number of people commuting mm-hmm. by electric driven two-wheelers. Mm-hmm.
If we look at mobility, you can come to the conclusion that mobility as itself cannot be sustainable. What do you think about that?
No, you know, my take on this, two entry points to that, I think. I mean, one is you can just look at the history of humans on Earth, and we are, per definition, a traveling species. We are curious. We search new frontiers. I think it's simply naive to think that, the solution is not to shut down mobility. And secondly, which I know is something that not everyone agrees with, but, we are running out of time, and we have to transform globally. So we need to basically have essentially all countries in the world engaging and agreeing on a pathway to decarbonize. And therefore, it has to be an attractive journey. You know, you cannot force the world mm-hmm. to go backwards and to just stop flying or stop driving or stop living what is considered being modern lives. So I'm of the view that we have to make mobility work in sustainable ways to be able to get the scale of the transformation. Mm-hmm. So that implies that I'm, for example, of the view that the solution is not to say, okay, I'm a climate scientist, so therefore I stop flying. I mean, mm-hmm. I respect those colleagues who take that decision, but I think that sends a signal to the general public that, okay, so that's what it implies. The only way for us to solve this problem is to sacrifice, and I can no mm-hmm. longer go about my life. I think we have to do it differently. I think we have to say, look, we should definitely try to reduce unnecessary flying or unnecessary mobility, but we also need to find green, decarbonized, sustainable solutions so that we can continue traveling, but at the same time do it in a responsible way. And I think that's the moment where we can start seeing the scaling of this transition. Mm-hmm.
So you developed the theory of the planetary boundaries, and you're describing there are 9 sectors, and we messed up maybe more than 50% of it. Mm. But what does this mean for us, especially for us car drivers? And you said we have to be reasonable working with it, but what is the impact for us now then?
Mm. Yeah, no, it has large, much, much larger implications for car drivers or the car or mobility sector in general than often believed. Because, so these 9 boundaries, what are they? Well, these are the systems that scientifically are proven to regulate the stability of the whole planet. Climate is only one of them, but you have 4 of them, which are what I call the biosphere boundaries. So you have biodiversity, fresh water, the cycles of nitrogen and phosphorus, and land being keeping the large forest systems intact, basically. But then you have one boundary, which is air pollution. So basically, one of the side products of mobility, which is causing exhaust and smog in cities, all of these are outside of their safe space. And if you want to now transition away from internal combustion engine driven cars, you need to try and avoid trade-offs. You need to try to find green solutions. So for example, we had an era where one solution to go away from diesel and gasoline was to go via ethanol as mm-hmm. a pathway towards, phase out fossil fuels. Well, but we know that that breaches and threatens a number of other planetary boundaries like land, biodiversity, fresh water. So the planetary boundaries allows you to account for the whole planet in choosing the right investments for sustainable mobility. So it does matter for sure. Even though, of course, one should recognize that for the car industry driven by diesel and gasoline today, the number one boundary is, of course, the climate boundary, mm-hmm. for sure. And if you're talking of a transition direct from internal combustion engine to electric drivetrains, then, of course, the question is, how do you produce green electricity? Well, green electricity can come from hydropower, from biomass, from wind and solar. Wind can be offshore, affecting marine ecosystems. So they do connect to other boundaries, but it's more about the energy transition.
Mm-hmm. You're a member of the advisory board of Mercedes-Benz for Integrity and Sustainability. What do you think about the fact that they still earn almost 90% of the money by selling combustion engines, cars with combustion mm. engines?
You know, I to start with, I must say, I really admire not only what Mercedes-Benz is doing, but also Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche. I mean, all the German car manufacturers are right in this race right now to be able to compete with a world that is moving away from the internal combustion engine. And of course, it's very challenging for leading companies like Mercedes-Benz, basically the inventor of the diesel engine, mm-hmm. To now be, you know, perfecting the internal combustion engine and investing engineer and technology in this digital pathway towards electrification. It's in that sense much easier for Elon Musk to you know, starting from scratch with just electrifying a car from scratch. So of course, it is really challenging. But the fact that it's still a minority of the volume of cars that are electric, I think it's something one has to recognize as one of the realistic facts that you cannot just switch this overnight. But I would like to see the pace increasing much, much faster. Mm-hmm. And my advice to Mercedes-Benz, but to any car industry, is that, you know, the industry has actually turned a corner before political leadership had turned a corner. So my assessment is that the car industry is actually ready to move, has the innovations, and has to a large extent adapted its direction of travel to be at the beginning of the end of the internal combustion engine. So what we need is policy. What we need is a hard price on carbon, hold on to the European Union's decision to stop sales of internal combustion cars from 2035, and put massive investments in infrastructure for recharging, so that the economy in Germany and beyond sees beyond any doubt the direction of travel. Now it's like, you know, I really don't envy Ola Källenius, the CEO of Mercedes-Benz, that says to be sitting in this really moving, you know, it's like a quagmire all the time. Look at Norway. Norway today, 90% of the cars sold in Norway are electric.
Mm-hmm.
90%. This is a country that put all the policies in place. I mean, massive subsidies, allowed electric vehicles to have their own driving lanes, free parking, you know, all the benefits, infrastructure. You know, you cross the border from my home country, Sweden, which is like a developing country on recharging infrastructure. You cross the border to Norway and it's like nirvana. You know, it's like having petrol stations along the way when it comes to electric recharging infrastructure. That's what you need. And of course, I think we have to understand that science, policy, and business must work much, much closer if we want to really scale the transition. So it's a choice. It's actually a choice.
But if you mention Norway, or you mentioned all the German or European manufacturers, especially Norway, you have a lot of Chinese car manufacturers. They say that, sell their cars there. Do you see difference in global settings of this way they go? Or is it just a European thing and we have to go further?
Well, that's a very... It's an important question, and I'm not entirely sure I'm best qualified to answer it, to be honest. But let me give you my, let's say, as an earth system science take on it. I mean, one is my very basic observation, which is that, look here, I get so many signals today, particularly now that we're in the run-up of European elections, and you get you have a drive towards more and more right-wing populism and more nationalism, questioning whether it's really the right choice to go so fast in moving away from the internal combustion engine. And that, you know, you cannot use climate policy to argue for abandoning this fantastic fossil fuel-driven mobility. And my view on that is that take a step back and say, okay, let's not bother about climate change for the moment. Let's not care about the planet at all. Just look at the world. Just look at China. Just look at what's happening. Just look at the IRA in the US, $300 billion in investing in green technology. If Europe doesn't support a rapid transition away from the internal combustion engine, I think the only diagnostic you can take is that then we are shutting down the car industry in Europe. It's not about the planet. It's about jobs. It's about the economy. It's about an existential journey for the German, the European car industry. China is not stopping, and neither is India or South Korea or any of the other large competitors in this area. Even the heavy truck industry in the world, if you look at Scania, Volvo, they're on a path, you know, they're beyond the turning point. There's no turning back for them on moving away from the internal combustion engine. It's only a pace of change. It's not if they're doing it, it's the pace of change. So I think Europe would take enormous risks if you now start saying, oh my God, we have to push a pause button on supporting the transition away from the internal combustion engine. On the other hand, I do support, for example, the European Union's effort of setting up the CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. I can see that Europe does not want to make the same mistake as happened in Germany with the Energiewende, when you basically sold out all the startups on solar voltaics to China and ended up basically killing a whole industry in Europe and being completely dependent on imports from, in this case, from China. I think we need to have a leveling playing field. I think we should be proud of the innovation and engineers and the technology capacity in Europe in when it comes to car manufacturing and truck manufacturing. And we need to find that competitive, you know, the competitive angle must be there. But at the same time, you don't want to kill the value we have in the European market. So it's a delicate balancing act. But I think the biggest mistake we can do is to now start backtracking on these very ambitious targets we have. And I come back to that, that I think the brave decision of the 2035 ban on selling internal combustion engine cars, to me, that is a very clever move because it gives any CEO in the car industry in Europe a very clear direction of travel. Of course, policy has to back it with investments, but it's a clear direction of travel at least.
Mm-hmm. Werbung.
Der Auto-, Motor- und Sportkongress geht in eine neue Runde. Bereits die 15. Ausgabe geht am 24. und 25. September in München an den Start und öffnet für die Gäste und Speaker die Pforten der Allianz Arena. Dort auf der Bühne erwarten euch wieder jede Menge Hochkaräter. Mit dabei ist beispielsweise der Ex-VW-CEO Herbert Diess, der Chef des Potsdam-Institut für Klimafolgenforschung Johann Rockström oder auch Audi-Chef Gernot Döllner oder Porsche-Vorständin Barbara Frenkel und viele, viele mehr. Und als wird das noch nicht reichen, starten wir den Kongress dieses Jahr mit einer KI-Fachtagung und suchen dort bei der AI Startup Challenge nach den besten Startups und ihren KI-Lösungen für die Mobilitätswelt. Und wie es sich für einen guten Wettbewerb gehört, gibt es natürlich auch was zu gewinnen, nämlich ganze 100.000 Euro für die beste Idee. Darum laden wir euch alle herzlich ein, am 24. und 25. September zu uns nach München zu kommen und euch die Speaker und Panels anzuschauen und natürlich auch das ein oder andere Startup kennenzulernen. Wir werden mit dem Podcast wie immer auch vor Ort sein und für euch ein paar Folgen aufzeichnen. Alle Infos zum Kongress, zur Anmeldung und den Tickets findet ihr auf ams-kongress.de und den Link packe ich euch natürlich auch noch in die Shownotes. Und jetzt geht's weiter mit der aktuellen Folge.
We discuss a lot the influence of AI at the moment. Do you see in this technology a kind of solves the climate crisis, or is it just another way to waste energy from your point of view?
I think it's neither. I definitely think it's a naive thought that AI would be the, you know, the silver bullet to solve the climate crisis. On the other hand, I don't see AI to be just a massive energy consuming negative. I think particularly in mobility and energy, you know, if we will see AI applications that can help us to use much, much smarter, redistributed, efficient ways of storing energy, for example, with car batteries that can then supply, be kind of a buffer in supplying electricity in urban areas. So AI plays and will continue to play an increasingly important role, but it's certainly not the panacea.
If you look at the car industry, you mentioned already like the ambition to go to electric cars, but do they have much more, like more recycling, more looking on the materials at itself, like plastic, fabrics, the steel, for example? How do you see these efforts they make and the aims they have?
Yeah, I know that's a really good point, and it takes us back to the planetary boundaries that, you know, a car does not become sustainable just because it has an electric drivetrain. It's really about steel and plastic and all the rare earth metals in the car. And there you have a big mix in the market for sure. But I must say, even here, I get increasingly reassured when I see, I mean, to begin with, all the entire car industry, at least in Europe, is taking scope one and two seriously. So both supply of all the inputs to the industry, what happens in the production, but even starting to look at the use of the cars and kind of accounting. But you're right, that's only the greenhouse gas accounting. But if you look, for example, at, again, coming back to Mercedes-Benz, that have now, you know, invested in renewable energy sourcing, but also invested in fossil fuel-free steel production as an input to cars. So I think you're starting to see quite an interesting trajectory towards looking at the material use as well that goes into building cars. But we're far away from seeing that universally across the entire car industry.
Mm-hmm. So if we for, let's say, we don't produce or sell more, no more cars anymore, we don't solve the problem we have, right?
Mm. You mean if we would halt stopping? Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that that is not the solution. That's a challenge we're facing. I mean, you could argue that one radical way of solving the solution is just to turn off.
You just say no to some points of our life.
Yeah, but as I said earlier, I don't think, I mean, let's put it this way. If you look at two countries in the world that has the most mature civil society and political parties on sustainability and green parties, Germany and Sweden. I mean, it's the two leading countries in the world. Germany actually leads in the world. No country in the world has reached 20% of the population voting for a green party. Germany is like number one, Sweden is number two. But it seems that you hit a glass ceiling when you come to, let's call it conventional environmentalism, that, you know, it's this deep engagement for the environment. I share that personally, very strongly. But I want it to be 100% to engage. We need to reach out to the remaining 80%. And how do you do that? And that's where I'm saying that you don't do that. I'm absolutely convinced that you don't do that by saying, stop driving cars, stop doing this, stop doing that. The way to do it is to say, yes, this is a journey that requires more justice, some lifestyle change, shifting diets, shifting consumption patterns, but it's still, you know, respecting your life. It's still a modern life, and mobility is and will continue to be fundamental there. But you know, again, in urban areas across Europe, I think it's quite exciting to see all these share pool type access to cars. Young people are not as attracted to own their private car anymore, but they're very attracted to have an app where you can anytime just access a car. So I think we're seeing shifts in behavior. I think that is a positive, but it should not be associated with this big sacrifice warning. It should be more about finding pathways of a smarter ways of mobility.
Your forecasts are not very optimistic. How do you personally deal with it? How do you feel in your daily life about that?
No, to be honest, it goes up and down. I mean, right now, in all honesty, in my whole professional life, I've never had reason to be as concerned as today. Mm. When you look at temperature rise, the accelerated rate of warming, what's happening in the ocean. I just came from Brazil, interacting with Brazilian colleagues who say that, look here, we're so close to a tipping point in the Amazon rainforest, which is not only because of temperatures, but also because of all the deforestation. So yes, I mean, it goes up and down. What I find, you know, keeps positive energy levels up is the discussions that we're having here today, which is that we see more and more evidence that industries across all sectors in society have turned a corner. And the sustainability is changing face. It's no longer an environmental agenda. It's more an agenda of innovation, of technology advancement, of finding modern solutions that actually gives, you know, better outcomes than the previous technologies. And mobility, again, I come back to that also. I think we underestimate the psychological impact of sustainable mobility because, you know, if you go into any urban area, and you want to, even if you just want to buy food or if you are looking for a new pair of shoes, the only way to get that product there is through mobility. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a truck transporting goods back and forth. The you know, the whole bloodstream of a modern economy is mobility. Mm-hmm. If you take away mobility, a society collapses. And the moment that mobility is sustainable and silent and clean, I think that sense psychologically signals that, okay, if mobility can give me this, then I can perhaps also, you know, do differently with regards to my waste, to my purchasing, to my choices in general, to my food choices, because we see mobility all the time. We see the noisy diesel-driven truck spitting out its terrible exhausts. And if that just continues on and on and on, what's the point with me stubbornly sitting on my bicycle, continuing to try and be as sustainable as possible? So I think one should not underestimate the value of the mobility or the automotive sector. I mean, just as a little parenthesis, for example, I just love the e-Formula One circus mm-hmm. in the world.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
Interesting.
And the reason why I think it's fantastic, I mean, I'm absolutely not a motor car funky in any way, but I love it because it's so cool and it's just so fast and so extreme and it's so silent and it's just totally proving that the green technology can take you right at that extreme frontier, and it attracts the best drivers in the world. I think Nico Rosberg is a fantastic ambassador for showing that this is not about, of course it's about environment, of course it's about the planet, but it's also about enjoying life. It's also about something positive coming out. And I hope the Formula E goes all the way and knocks out Formula One, which of course may not happen, but you see what I mean. It's mm-hmm. it's finding the positives.
Great. At the end, I would love to have like a pro tip from a super scientist as you are for our listeners and viewers. How could the people out there have a life better with a better clear consciousness? What is your pro tip for the audience? Mm. What can they do?
Yeah, well, actually, and it might surprise you, that I think the most important thing that we all can do is to talk to our friends, to keep up to date with the science as best as possible, and share those stories with friends and neighbors and family, and to help reposition the whole agenda, to say, look here, we're putting the planet at risk, but this is no longer an environmental agenda. It's about handing over a positive future for our children. Sustainability as a pathway to success, basically. And I think that is number one. But number two, I think it is also really important for anyone today to actually recognize that we are in a crisis. It is urgent. We're running out of time. And now is the moment to step up and start to really look at, you know, what choices can I make in my family, in my life? What pressure can I put on my bosses? How do I vote in elections? You know, all of these things are more important than ever.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
It was really interesting and great to hear from you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining. We hope you enjoyed the talk and get all this information. We enjoyed. Meanwhile, you could we would like you to take the subscription, leave us a comment on podcast@move-magazin.de. Leave your comment also on Spotify, on iTunes, and so on. And we would be happy if you are next time again with us, and especially Birgit, hopefully
hope to see you soon
here with us again.
Thank you.